Should we start by introducing ourselves just for the sake of the recording? I'm Adrian from Conical.
I'm Terry Bird.
Kate Considine.
Brody Lemming.
Sasha Guinness.
Perhaps we should start by me briefly outlining the changes to the space and the way that I perceive those changes. In a way, for me, it's against newness. It's against this idea of like the makeover and the renovation. It's much more about reconfiguring existing elements. And the way that I'm understanding that, I guess, is playing into Conical's history and even consciousness. So it's a sort of moving entity that both leads and responds to the program. And that was, I think, an important, foregrounding to us working together at this juncture. You approached the gallery. You approached the gallery at a time when there was a sort of a material flux about to happen, which in my mind was representative of some of the programming changes and structural changes that were happening in the organisation. It was an interesting moment because you had been quite active in terms of the Three Square project last year, where you worked with Katie Lee and Kieron Swan and Luke Sands. And then later in the year with a collaborative project space with Katie Lee. And it seemed to me that when you approached us, it was just a meeting point of where you were at your practice and I guess where we felt we were. And as a result, I feel the experience was quite intimate.
Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely the departure point. Having done the Three Squared and did a lot of research within the space and a lot of research about the history of Conical and what other exhibitions had been here and how people had approached it. And we basically taught the boys our process, basically, by coming into a space with no materials, no props, and just seeing how you could feel your way through a space and how you could generate work from that, from documenting yourself in a space in sort of different positions, and then making work purely on that, so in a very short time frame. But it got me excited about the space. It got me excited about the history and understanding, and you know, I realised that I was conceiving solo shows here. So and therefore, knowing that you were doing the renovations, it just seemed like a really good point to ask as well. That was such a lovely opportunity to work into a space that was in transition, where I had something to push against and something to activate, where it wasn't just a white cube, it was an unfolding of a space that I could talk about as well.
My overriding impression now is it's not an exhibition that limits itself to architectural response. It sort of unfolds beyond that to use that as a vehicle for more specific tests, if you like. And the word test is interesting in itself in relation to perhaps a culmination point, a test for what. But that is my overriding sense, that it takes architectural response as a received history, doesn't necessarily accept it wholesale. It juxtaposes that received history with other histories.
Absolutely, and personal histories of being in a space and other ideas that have come from different points within my practice that I haven't had an opportunity to show. So it's not as though this particular work, the screen-based work, was a response to this particular site that was conceived as a response of going to Santiago with Katie Lee and Jacob, Susan Jacobs, and curated by Meredith Turnbull. And we were going over there without any conceptual premise and without any materials, knowing that we had to do a site-responsive work within a particular gallery we'd never seen before. So there was a leap of faith involved in that, and there was a leaping into the void and an unknown and a knowing that we were going to be on the other side of the world and sort of turned over. And that's where that idea came from, also because the earthquakes had just happened in Chile. So and we weren't sure whether we were going to go. So there was this sort of on the other side of the world, up, you know, turned upside down and in a state of flux, and there's a lot of unknowing. An unstable ground, which is where this idea came from. So even though it's actually crawled on the outside of this gallery, it wasn't actually conceived for this space. But being able to make it site responsive, given the history of performative site responsive works in this space, it's sort of a perfect way of being able to show that idea and contextualise it, to locate it in this gallery and within that context.
Just before we go any further, could you just run through what you've done here, just for the, I mean, we've got a lot of visual documentation here, but it might be nice just to give a little potted description.
Sure. I mean, taking on that idea of a site that's in a state of transition, but it's a held site, so it's a contrived space as well, because it's in the middle of renovations, but then it's stopped specifically for me to actually activate it. So it's held its breath. And sort of coming from that idea as well, I wanted to create a very still space where there was these sort of discarded objects that could have been placed somewhere between a domestic environment or an attic space, is how I was enjoying thinking about it, but also looking like it was in a state of flux, where I've mimicked one of the bare walls and shoved it up into the ceiling. I've made a structure of an empty vitrine that has no glass and has nothing displayed in it, but it's sort of framing the space and framing up objects on the other side of it, so when you're walking up to it, you actually get to see objects before walking into it. So there's a number of different layers, and also a table that I made specifically referencing the size of my brother. And I've suspended that table on ropes hanging from the rafters, and for opening night he was asleep on the table for the whole opening, genuinely asleep, which was very, I won't say what that was like, I'll just leave it with that. And the table is sort of weighted down by concrete glass objects that are light fittings and drinking glass, sort of looking somewhere between a weight and a tape, somehow familiar but displaced at the same time.
Thanks for the description.
Very strange.
Myself
and I can see.
I think I just wanted to pick up on Bridie. You're talking about going to Santiago and that transition being a leap of faith, and in a way not knowing what that site was, or not knowing what that gallery was, or that space was going to be, where the work would eventually be housed. Mm. And in a sense, that lack of knowing sort of in part sort of started to frame the condition of what might happen there in that site. And I just wanted to pick up on how, you know, Conical as a gallery tends to in some ways be, you know, outside of having a studio space. I mean, the body doesn't have a studio space that she operates in. It becomes a kind of studio for the work, a space where of imagining, where you can start to drop in things and move them around, and again, it's not fixed. Mm. But this idea of leap of faith, which kind of I think underpins this idea of what a threshold might be, or what a suspended state might be, which is always sort of on the edge of becoming, on the edge of a condition, holding itself there. And I think when I sort of experience this work, there are a number of elements that draw from that condition of edge, of not knowing, of leap of faith. sitting here looking at the video will probably be the first reference, being the first sort of element of the work that I sort of really had a moment with when I first came into the gallery. And it's quite a complex piece in many ways. Do you want to describe first the process of making it?
Sure. It was. Yeah. I mean, it was a collaboration with Derek Ives, who's a rigger from Circus Oz. For a long time, I had no idea how I was going to do this. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to make a video of myself walking down a wall. And I didn't know how to access the people that were going to be able to do that. And that's obviously the main reason why I didn't want to attempt to do this in on the other side of the world, not being able to speak the language. Obviously, I needed to trust the person enormously. But it's also, I mean, I didn't know Derek that well, but we sort of met each other around, and I just asked an enormous favour. And we made this very beautiful utilitarian support structure on the roof of Conical, made up of six plastic containers filled with water. So it was 600 litres of water in total to counterbalance my weight, and a truss that hung over the edge of the roof. And all the physics was left up to Derek, because that's not my expertise. I just explained to him what I was thinking of doing, and for him this was like, this is just work, this is what we do. So it wasn't anything spectacular. Yeah, yeah, you want to walk down a washroom. The only difference was that it was outside of a controlled environment. Usually he does it within a circus school or places that are actually set up for all those things. So we had to sort of create that environment on the roof and hooked up from the plumbing from downstairs in the bathroom here and ran hoses up to the top. And it was such a lovely way and such a lateral way of thinking about counterbalance of weight, because otherwise how on earth were we going to get that much weight up onto the roof? And also be able to do it slowly so we knew where we were going and whether it was going to be okay, whether it was going to work. And then yes, it was just like putting on, it was work for me. I didn't really think about the perceived heroics of it. I think a lot of people have gone, so wow, do you do this all the time, and have you done this before, and have you been training for this? And it's not in the slightest. I've never done anything like this before. Never been harnessed. The closest I've got to it was another video I did where I climbed up my bedroom window in a warehouse space a few years ago, where I climbed out my window, scaled down a rusty drain pipe, and ended up jumping 4 meters to the ground off screen. And there's something about just pushing my physicality in the urban environment that is, you sort of project yourself into these sort of spaces of what ifs, and it's quite amazing to go through the process of being able to experience those ideas.
It's a pretty gutsy thing to do, I think. And watching it, you know, I just wonder whether the lack of familiarity with the process sort of somehow has fed into the work, because
it's an incredible tension because of that anxiety almost, and that's what you feel as a viewer, is that. Yes.
Just even the how that harness is almost cutting the female body, your body, right at the centre, almost. And I couldn't help but think of how that starts to push the body into a particular form. You know, I'm thinking Barbie doll. I don't know why.
It becomes corset-like,
and then there's this incredible tension in the neck. In the kind of almost automated,
steady kind of movement of the body, trying to maintain itself just on that edge of.
That was sort of the idea. I wanted it to be awkward. I wanted it to be learning how to walk again, basically. I didn't want it to be a casual stroll, like a theatre piece. Mm. As though I've got my top hat and I'm now going to balance my cane. I didn't want that. I wanted that fear. You know, there's this moment in the other video where I'm sort of hesitating, and you can see like I'm imagining broken legs, and there's this beautiful moment of hesitation, which sort of makes it. You know, this is real, and it's not just.
So it's very much a relationship between you and the apparatus, which is the thing I think that links it with the elements inside the gallery as well. Mm-hmm. Is all of these bits of apparatus, and then. As a viewer, how you figure out what's going on with them, if some of them are activated and some of them aren't. Mm-hmm.
But there's something else operational in this, I think, and it's like a force unknown. Mm-hmm. It's like that pressure or resistance that the body almost appears to be pushing against. Mm-hmm. along an inverted video, so it's now horizontal, which at once would have been a vertical drop to the ground. There is something that I can't quite put my finger on that's held in the tension and this unknown force that is so extraordinarily inverted again once the body meets the ground, once the body meets the ground, where there's the collapse, the embracement of almost that gravitational space, that space of collapse. And there's so much leading up to that point where that moment of collapse happens. It's so tender.
Yeah, tender.
We're kind of finding our way towards it now, but it becomes human again. It becomes
That's right. It's as if after we fly, we relearn to walk. It doesn't have any of the release of Klein's leap into the void.
No.
It doesn't have any of that brinkmanship of being on the edge of something unknown. It's very much about the all too known, the all too familiar. Like Bridie's talking about testing the body against the urban environment in the way that it almost represents the steps between sort of doubt and faith, how we navigate our way through an increasingly sort of complex world. There's an element of abstraction to it for me, the way that it's been flipped, the way that it's in black and white, the way that the figure is in life size, the way that Bridie's chosen to project it on these boards. But still, the humanity for me is where we've ended up after the, I guess, the heroics of perhaps the ideal of a changed world. Here we are, shuffling with all the gravitas and doubt and faith of one foot in front of the other.
It feels very voyeuristic, that moment of release at the end. It feels like something we don't normally see in people, in public. And it was similar to watching Jim sleep. It's captivating, but it's kind of feel reserved.
Well, it's the state of vulnerability that I was interested in showing as well. Like, I mean, it just quickly, I think, like, to me, this is just a metaphor of a psychological state of, like, trying to get through something that is intense, and you're trying to be brave about it, and you're trying to get yourself to the end, and you get yourself to the end, and it's such a relief that you've made it. You know, it can be a very simple, quick summation like that as well that we go through. Sometimes intensely and sometimes momentarily.
This point where the rope slackens, every time I've watched it, I keep wondering about that. In some ways I don't want to see the rope slacken. I want that relationship between the body and the apparatus to be maintained. But then again, when the fact that the rope does slacken and it's like all the tension goes out of the image, maybe I find myself thinking about that all the time, like that ending of the video and the sequence.
It makes me want to start to watch it again, I think.
Well, like every time I watch it, I think I kind of feel like I'm disappointed that the tension's gone. But then I think, well, maybe that's a good thing because you know the illusion isn't maintained. Or I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. It sort of brings up the question, how long do you want to hold on? How long can you hold on?
It's a held breath and a released breath. I mean, that's what I was thinking of. And also because you don't see the leap of faith. You don't actually see the departure point where I'm actually getting out the window and having to go. And I've edited that out because to me that was almost too dramatic, but it was nice to keep that in because it explains what it is and it's not just an illusion, it's not just a trick.
It was an interesting experience cropping out the apparatus in the press photo, which I tried. And it just gave it such a different reading. Ideas of the spectacular were emphasised a lot more.
Yeah.
It didn't seem to locate itself anywhere. And, you know, it
becomes a circus trick.
And I wonder about, I mean, the fact that it's dominated the conversation so far is interesting. And I wonder about a couple of things, the publicness of it in relation to the intimacy.
Yeah, well, the thing was, nobody was there to watch it. It was just, I didn't invite anybody. In fact, I told you not to come. You're not allowed to come.
You also told me you were going to have a mattress on the foot.
I didn't tell you I was going to put 600 litres of water on the roof, either.
No, you didn't. Or it's just the first time I've heard that.
Or a tank of plumbing to get it up there.
But that point that you just raised, Adrian, I think is interesting when you might... relate this work, say, to an early Matthew Barney drawing and restraint project, where the spectacle is foregrounded, even in the very, very early works. When he, I think he was at Yale and he was performing, you know, these drawing pieces where he was restraining his body more to create a drawing, to stretch his body or push towards a limit as far as possible. This kind of sections... that idea. And maybe it does remove the heroic from that, and it does raise the question, what is it for a young woman to perform an act like this, to engage in an act like this, because it is a female body, and I think that's notable.
Really notable, which I find really bizarre, because I think, like, the reason why we chose Kieran and Luke for Three Square is because we wanted to use performance, but we didn't want to use ourselves, because every time we use ourselves, it's a female form, and when the boys use themselves, it's just a body, and we're very jealous of that. And we wanted to be able to use these figures in space without it being gendered, without it being loaded in a particular way. And so for me to do this and for it to all of a sudden become this extreme female form, which is obviously not what I didn't even realise that until it was life size, but it's like, wow, that looks like I've got this major corset on, and I'm, you know, it's almost like a it's ironic, I suppose.
I mean, I think when you're
more than that to the body, though, doesn't it? It's really sections of.
I mean, in some ways it's kind of great because it's how it felt. I mean, you sort of look at it and go, that's why it felt like that, because it's all my weight is on my organs, my internal organs. They're just in my vulnerable spot where I have no muscles.
But also the reproductive organs.
That's just there. But just the softest, most vulnerable part of the body, you know, is what's holding me up, is where all the tension is, where you're, you know, the underbelly.
I think the Matthew Barney reference is interesting because I've been thinking of the Tricia Bound work of walking along the gallery wall, and also she does the, you know, man walking down the wall. But they're kind of performative, and they're about the movement through space, whereas, you know, making the reference to the Matthew Barney, this is kind of in between. It is about the constraining of the apparatus, not just the movement of the body in the space, which is more the Tricia Brown kind of reference. So yeah, it's how it sits between those two.
There's such a powerful claim on the architecture, thinking of, you know, just bringing it back to this context again, of Yutaka Shindo's videos of scraping the walls, just at the same situation, just before we're about to paint the walls, she came in and had herself upside down with bare feet and was scraping the walls with her feet. And I guess it was a play on traction, you know, this inability to claim or locate her body with this space, or indeed perhaps any space, played into, you know, the situation with her in Australia and in Japan, etc., this sort of dislocation. But here there's such a claim that it feels so...
In what way?
Well, you can imagine the pressure on the soles of the feet against the building to maintain the upright position. Well, not the upright, but the 90-degree position. Because you were saying, Bridie, that there was the physics were sort of demanding that you would pivot from the hip and you would slip out.
Yeah, if you look at my feet, I'm actually not pushing that hard. I'm trying very hard to stay on the wall. Because otherwise I was going to swing out from it. So the lack of gravity was, it was more about trying to figure out what upright was on a 90-degree angle, because I had no sense of... It was like trying to be really in my body to understand what my body was doing, because all the reference points were out of whack.
But I think that claim is also articulated in relationship to a kind of idea about, I guess, colony, you know, as a general term.
Yeah.
You know, you think of early explorers, you know, pushing against the limits to pass through, to walk through, pass through a claim, a territory, a landscape. And that sense of pressure or resistance implied in that act, you know, you've got to travel all over the world and you're sort of walking into the, you know, into these unknown spaces. Not that this is unknown, but I think there's something about the sense of territorialising or colonising a space that's implied through the difficulty in the act of moving through it somehow.
Yeah, I disagree. Like, I look at that and go, I'm not trying to claim the gallery in the slightest. Mm-hmm. And it's not about... I mean, I find that really...
I don't need a claim on this particular, you know, situation.
It's more about claiming myself.
Yeah.
You know, not the actual space.
I'm talking about the, you know, the claim to the ground, the claim against physics, if you like, the claim, the authority of being able to keep yourself upright in a situation. I mean that's...
Yeah. I thought you meant in terms of climbing a mountain and sticking a flag on it. That's how I was sort of...
No,
that's the sort of antithesis of that.
I think what it does is there is articulate a different space because of the way you've projected it. It's like the world goes on in the background, even though it's inverted, but it goes on regardless of you, and it's like you're occupying some other space and time.
This is a good moment for me to bring up Gary Hill. I think because he talks about a relationship to his own, this idea of the green zone in the wave, which is a kind of reference to the notion of finding a still point in a turning world.
Mm-hmm.
That one, when one's surfing through that green zone, the wave sort of continually to curl around you, like the world continues to turn as we're moving through it. It's moving as we're moving. But finding that idea of a still point in a turning world, which requires the body to continually...
It's contrary. It's like this other space that she's moving through as the world moves in its own normal way.
That's the kind of idea, that there are these different lines, and that you're actually... constantly repositioning and adjusting yourself.
That they're parallel,
through
they're connected.
It's parallel and connected.
Mm. Well, claiming a non-space, activating a space that you're not meant to normally activate.
That isn't apparent.
That you're not, you know, even though you can actually claim or, you know, activate any of these spaces, but climbing up the middle of a stairwell, which is another video I did, or climbing on the outside of a building, or climbing the perimeter of the house that burnt down, where I grew up, and sort of reinserting myself back into these spaces that you're not meant to activate. And I love that moment. I'm so glad he was there. Mm-hmm. It was such a nice ending.
You didn't stop.
So the decision to perform in what seems like a private manner, no one was invited to witness it.
It was never a performance per se. I mean, it was totally for me. All the videos I've done where I've used myself have always been private. I usually videoed myself, but this time I actually got somebody to help me just because of the fact that I was tethered to something, to the building.
I'm interested in your decisions as to turn it into video, to project it in this way, particularly in relation to the live situation we had. You know, it did set up perhaps another parallel between the movement in this video, but the movement that's only created through the light of the projector, and the animate movement, the movement of the real in the galleries. And I wonder about that parallel, what you were trying to achieve.
Well, in some way this is sort of like, in relation to Jim, this is sort of like sleepwalking, I suppose. It sort of becomes otherworldly in that way, and that this moment coming up where I'm actually, the relief on the ground is what relates to him sleeping. I really wanted these the horizontal and the vertical to keep on having these interplays throughout the space. So he looked very much like that, tethered to these ropes on this apparatus, but asleep. And I was very interested in layering all the objects and video with each other, so they kept on shifting their meaning. So they'd have one meaning by themselves, maybe a number of meanings by themselves, and then that plus that equals this, and that plus that equals this. And there's this constant dialogue within all the works where by themselves they can even be quite mute, but the transference between them sort of makes them more ambiguous, and the ambiguity is what generates the work or the ideas.
Yeah.
That sort of unknowingness, that limbo, that constant shift of meaning and having to second guess what else is going on in the relationships.
Mm.
I really enjoyed
that bit. This, let's call it a temporal decoupling, this real time experience that you have as a viewer.
Mm.
Firstly, visual, seeing bare feet protrude from behind the screen doors, and as you got closer, the experience changed.
Mm. But also
whereas this past act, it becomes a sort of an archival document.
So
it sort
of seems
to play. Well, that's right.
That's the thing, because he was only here for 2 hours.
Yeah,
so
but I wanted to ask you how you felt about, you know, these two tests, acts, situations in relation to, say, you know, the history of performance and you know, the classic conundrum of documentation versus, you know, the live act.
Mm. I mean, Jim was much more of a performance than this is a performance. I was making a video.
Mm.
You know, where Jim was a performer, but he was asleep, I was taking that away, that sort of performative spectacle, again, away, that moment of the...
Yes and no. Yes and no. I mean, I unfortunately wasn't here to see Jim sleeping, but when I see the apparatus, I mean, that is a way of staging and framing. Even though your subject isn't, you know, performing in an overt way, it's an internalized space, a state of sleep that in some ways the viewer can't access. You can't access that internal state of the subject, which is, I imagine, partly what would make it so powerful. But there is a staging.
Oh, absolutely. With an inch of its life, I'm not denying that. There was everything is about the layering to get to him, really. It's about that unraveling or unveiling of getting to this very intimate space that was absolutely controlled. If you want to look at his face, you have to be here with him. You can look at him over there, but you're not going to ever see his face. So to have that engagement was an absolute staging. There's no doubt. I didn't mean it like that. I meant in terms of there will be a performance, and it'll be this time, and we'll watch this, and that'll be it. And something will happen, and it'll energize the space in this way, and that'll be the end. You know, I just meant in terms of it being... I don't mean it's taking away from the intensity of it at all. It was actually... really intense for me.
It was extremely intense in the opening. And the first opening, when no one spoke, everyone came in, became palpable.
Yeah, it was actually, I was getting stressed.
It was so quiet, actually.
Even before they saw Jim, though.
Yes.
Like, they saw this, they came in and they were like, okay, they're going to breathe in a second.
I'm going to drink a glass of wine.
But that was for us who didn't see that. It's anecdotal. You know, like I've heard the descriptions from numerous people about what was, and so it is in the work as this anecdotal reference. And so we imagine, you know, Kate and I didn't see it, so we imagine what that must have been like.
Yeah.
And that seems like an interesting and curious way to deal with the, you know, the limited time span that a performance takes place in this kind of exhibition that has a longer duration, and then how do you bring that into the work. I mean, it does rely largely on angel to tell the story to the people that come to it.
But that's an interesting way for it to come into it.
Absolutely. No, I think that's really important. And the same with Tori Nimble is doing the performance tomorrow, which is the last day. And I haven't advertised, and I said specifically I don't want to advertise, but I've been telling
people.
So, but that's for exactly that reason. I'm interested in that, and the groundswell of that, and the projection of that is like, oh, well, this is what's happened, and I've heard about this, and it's a different way of, exactly, how do you deal with a really intense performance that you want people to imagine or project into it, besides just the interpretation of it?
Because it's part of the staging of it, isn't it?
Absolutely, and the absence of the body is really powerful as well, and the knowledge of this is what happened is really powerful. So it's constantly layered. So I was here every Saturday telling everyone about Jim sleeping. Mm-hmm. Everyone who came in, this is what happened. I think you know, one of those type of pieces. And
we come into the space with that. We carry our image of that, our imagined image of that here. So then it becomes a subjective, part of our subjective experience of the world as well. Mm-hmm. Part of our own imaginative space.
I feel a little ambivalent about the story.
Mm.
Part of me feels like I should resist imparting that knowledge because it's not here. And why do I feel the need to complete the exhibition by imparting that information?
No, I don't feel like it was a completion. It's about generating stories or things in between the spaces and what's outside of it, and also making the viewer project into the space in a certain way. Like you're inserting this idea that something you can do in other ways, but by talking to them and saying, this is what happened, this event, this very powerful event happened in this space, and all of a sudden the space changes again. And that's interesting. I find that interesting.
Well, that's the other part of the ambivalence, is that I feel in telling a viewer that something has happened at a different time, and something may happen in the future, they feel like they're participating in it, or they've come at a moment in a shifting continuum. And that's the part that I feel more positive about. But I always feel...
Do you feel like you're not representing the event fairly? Or
I feel like I'm completely colouring what's here.
that's what I'm excited about.
The other interesting part to that is
it
renders...
everyone gets that.
No, but it also renders the the material installation as it is, which we haven't discussed really, as prop.
But in some ways it is.
But the
indentation of the pillow, I mean, it's not as though it's like, oh, I'm completely colouring it because there's a sleeping body there all of a sudden. Mm. It's really clear that that's what it's referencing, and that the table becomes a bed, and that's very much a part of that work, regardless of whether the world changes or not. Mm. So it's not as though it's a complete shift.
Mm. I mean, I think one of the interesting things about this show is that from the moment that you enter, there's a sense that the way that you navigate that space, the space of this work is being conditioned. From this kind of, for those that would be familiar with Conical, a new entry point into the open space of the gallery around this different access point, the sense of push through the space towards the back of the space, which is in part activated by that the line of movement of Bridie and video work. Bridie's also mentioned these frames behind frames that have kind of been set up, which create, another pull back into the back of the space. So, once you sort of start to turn that corner and you see the raised bed table structure, already the body's conditioned to want to put themselves, position oneself in that or on that structure or in relationship to the different structures and objects in the space. And so that becomes partly performative, partly conditioned by the way that the whole installation is staged or set up. Without Bridie's brother being there, I want to be there. I'm already there. I'm already on that bed. That was my experience anyway. So perhaps the absence of the performance actually also activates something else more directly in the experience of the yoga.
I often feel that it can close the reading a little, and that a viewer might think, oh, that's what that's for, when they might implicate themselves into that object and the relationship between that object and the other objects a little more had they not feel like they...
It's scripted in a way.
Yeah, it's a different thing. This is probably more about the viewer response than it is about your intention. But I think I see that, as you have probably on the Saturday. Brody, could you talk about your decision to use things that you've found here, things that you've made in the studio, and things that are in between the studio?
Sure. I mean, I asked you specifically to leave any detritus left over from the renovations or the in-between renovations, and I came in and there was that non-corner. What is that architectural device called?
We refer to it as a chamfered corner.
Okay. The chamfered corner was
only you had a name.
I think it is an architectural term.
Was piled
with that's not Terry.
Spare enough. A lot of different pieces of materials, which I've managed to sneak most of them back into the space, even though it looks like there's not much here. But I used the plasterboards for the windows to block them off, but to still leave a little bit of light. I just wanted to mute those windows because it's actually so loud out there, not sound-wise, but colour-wise. Like, that's why I've made this black and white, because it's red and white and it's very intense, and I really wanted to mute the space and mute the light coming in. And the same with making that wall. They're all old doors from Conical, and just I knew I wanted to have some sort of false screen. Originally I thought it was going to be this as a screen, but there was too much black lines going on, so it just became much more simplified. And I wanted to mimic the walls, but also so use some of the timber, but also bring in my own stuff. So it was like, well, which bit's yours, which bit is the renovations. Which worked really well, because it means that the whole space gets claimed. Like a friend of mine, Emily Fioretti, was looking at the latches on the movable door and said, that's a fantastic touch, I love what you've done with that, it's so perfect. Which wasn't mine at all, but that's fantastic, because it means that everything becomes part of it. Everything's intended to be here and has its place, which is interesting. And the same with the little silver object embedded in that far wall. Like Kate said, I like that drawing down to that point, that focus point, even though a lot of people don't see it. But it's just, if you do see it, then everything becomes activated again, all the holes in the walls, and is there anything else like that around? It's a sort of a device to be able to look very closely at something and then turn around and look at this much larger structural work in a different way. Yeah, having to be intimate with it as well, so you're getting up close to it and inspecting the detail of it.
And what about the piece of wood against the wall, against the brick wall?
I have an ongoing absolute obsession with false support structures. And I've used them in almost every show I've ever done, and I realise it's sort of becoming this little intervention that I can't help but put in there. But it's I think it's also like in terms of making, because they're exactly the same as the structures used for the wall. And I was just interested in claiming that fireplace space, that hearth, as part of the domestic environment by lining that wall up with the edge of the hearth, but also not wanting it to become purely domestic. I wanted it to keep being a space of flux, where it wasn't one or the other. So it's like a prop suggesting finished site, but it's just a play, I suppose, with that idea.
I enjoy the illusion of the lightweight piece of timber and how it touches heavy 100-year-old masonry wall. Feeds back into this contact point for me quite nicely. There's so much going on here, Brian. It's very complex, but I feel as though it does draw itself back into fairly coherent conceptual narratives. If we even think about the term suspension, I think that we can not reduce, but there are different ways of probing the idea of suspension. Do you feel that?
Yeah, very strongly.
At first you feel like there's just too much going on.
I think that one of the aspects of this exhibition that you spoke about in the initial part of the conversation, as did Bridie, was taking the stuff that was here in the middle of the renovation and reconfiguring that material. And so they're sort of thinking about how one might do that as a part of the work. But underlying those decisions, and I think the comment about you know, wood up against the wall kind of points to this, there's an emotional and a psychological content, you know. But these objects read to me in a very psychological way. You know, they're invested with it. And with this idea around suspension and unstable ground, heightened states of being, in between states on perhaps on the edge of a transition or on the edge of a condition. But my first feeling when I walked in here was that this work kind of hit me in the chest. It wasn't just about moving objects or reconfiguring objects in a space. There's something uncomfortable, something that makes me feel anxious, and Terry picked up on this earlier as well, particularly in relationship to the video work. Something that starts to make me think about the human condition or what is it to be human. So I don't know if other people have had that response as well.
I suppose picking up on what Adrian was talking about earlier and what Brian said about responding to the space, shell is the thing that comes to mind, like conical as a physical shell and a shell of past practices, and the fact that the walls are exposed, that they don't have plasterboard on them, become a shell, and it's like you're responding to that, you know, crawling down the outside of the shell, playing with the inside of the shell. That's how I kind of see the relationship between the work and the response to the work, to the site of the work and all of its kind of history. And then this, you know, the incredible tension in the video, the physicality of that, to me that is then offset by almost a lack of physicality in some of the elements, how they are in the space, which is why I asked about that. Like, to me that is an without physicality it's an image. And I also, you know, the way the table is suspended and then the illusion that it's supported by those other objects but it's not actually supported by them, that back and forth between the image of something and the physicality of something. And listening to the way you describe the placement of these other things, there's a staging of something. And maybe there's that tension between the staging of something and the thing that is my anxiety. And you know, maybe that's an interesting thing about the work, that it does that, that it presents those two ways of dealing with the things that it's dealing with, rather than being just the physicality or just the staging of that.
You may use the word claim. I think if you think about that in a psychological way, then maybe the distinction between what should be used and what shouldn't be used is gone, and maybe the distinction between inside and outside is gone, and the psychological state is really pushed beyond the normal state. Everything is ripe for the taking. Everything can be used because there's no societal restriction. Why not do that as well as do this? Why not do anything? What is it that's restricting?
But also at the same time, it's incredibly, even though it's suggesting these sort of subversive acts, it's incredibly still. And
I don't know if they're subversive, but
In terms of domestic subversion. Yeah. Well, I don't mean
okay.
In terms of
As in, Helene, why not?
Yeah, why not sit on the table and walk
down
a
wall? Why not walk down a wall?
Yeah. That's what I meant. I don't mean in terms of highly political, but just in terms of shifting what's possible. But at the same time, there's I wanted it to be really still, like it's all these things could go off kilter, but I didn't want there to be this, like the wall could have easily been on this intense angle coming through, and all these sort of detritus could be in the middle of this state of flux that's the same tension as this, but I didn't want that, I wanted it to be just off. So there's that tension coming from the just off, where it's not this aggressive or dynamic space, it's like just lifted off the ground and has this like has this angle, but it's not like this jarring angle where it's, you know, and that this folds into that. Like without this, this becomes a very peaceful show. And I was interested in playing with those things, where this potentially quite peaceful thing can be loaded with anxiety and off-kilter, you know, this off-kilter feeling through the first thing you see before entering.
We can talk about it in terms like emotional geometry, but it's very, very difficult to imbue inert objects without giving the viewer a sense of anxiety and psychological state.
I reminded of Robert Gerber's Cribs, where he made the baby cribs that were perfectly vertical, as perfectly as he could make them, and then those that were kind of skewed sideways. And beds that were perfectly made up and neatly fitted into the corner but slightly scaled down, that you start to view the straight crib as being as perverse as the bed one. maybe sort of returning to where's the point of resistance in these structures. You know, I'm looking for, but I'm wondering, you know, it's interesting, how do you position those structures to allow for that point of resistance, and is a straight line as good as a slightly bent one,
The straight line becomes bent because of
what else is being activated in the space.
How do you feel about live performance now after this show, as putting yourself in the role of a performer?
I've never liked that. I'm not interested in that bit. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, in some ways it would have been great, but I definitely struggled with that, because it's like, I would love to have a sleeping body, and it makes sense for the artist to be the sleeping body, but I didn't want to be asleep in my opening. I didn't want to be that would have become this whole other layering that I wasn't really interested in. And I kind of like the idea that there's these sort of things set up where the artist is elsewhere as well, or that
I suppose you think the artist is always invested in that body, whether it's a sleeping body or a secondary performative body, whether it's male or female. You can still read it to some degree as a having an autobiographical calling.
I think sometimes they can just become other elements of the work, depending on how it's staged. Not necessarily standing in for the artist.
No, I think it's just sort of like all the performance that I've been involved with, not actually doing it myself, but in terms of my performance, like with Luke and Kieran, it's this way of the viewer projecting themselves into that site of this poetic imagining of how you could be within the gallery or outside of the gallery. And it's a way of activating the viewer. That's the way that I see a performance. That's its role of And the same with Tori tomorrow. I think that's going to be, you know, completely creating this tension. But I'm not interested in sitting on the table for 5 hours. I mean, that's not, you know, but I'm interested in having coming up with a performance that she would do, and that we collaborated to come up with this idea that was related to me coming down the wall, counterbalanced by water, and that's where that idea has come from, sort of a restaging of that that also relates to the performance of the opening night. But I'm not interested in being a performer. I just never have. I hated it. I just had this.
Well,
no, but in terms of live performance,
how do you avoid the role of puppet master and auteur? Mm-hmm.
That's director. That's totally different. Director, I'm completely happy with. You know, but the actual, I mean, I would just get too self-conscious. Mm-hmm. I would be going in and out of a zone. I just know that I couldn't keep that publicly for myself. Absolutely. So therefore, for a video or in private, absolutely. But in terms of
it's not about authorship for you. It's much more about your physical presence.
Yeah.
So why the video? How does that?
Because it's private. It's. I mean, the actual. That's what I'm saying. The actual performance, the live performance of it, is a private thing for me. But the idea of it, I'm happy to share publicly, and that's why I'm happy to direct somebody.
But you've chosen not to direct somebody in the video, chosen to
If it's a video, but that's, yeah, absolutely, that's what I'm saying.
So there's that one stage of detachment, so it becomes a picture rather than a live act that gives you the necessary space.
Yeah, I don't think anyone, I think it would have been very, it would have been a very different, and you don't get to edit in the same way. So for people to actually watch this, it would have been a very different thing.
Mm.
For a start, I couldn't have slowed it down. You would have seen the leap of faith every time. You would have seen me coming down the wall the first time and sort of hunched over. You know, I didn't want any of that in it. That wasn't the idea of the work. So it's absolutely about being able to say, this is what I want you to see.
Mm.
Where in a performance, for something like this, I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have said, okay, you can come now.
And it would have been a completely different work because it's the fact that it's been reoriented that makes it interesting, that creates that other, you know, space and time aspect that's captured by you activating that space in that way and it being projected, you know, on an angle. You just wouldn't get that much in the life.
Yeah, and that was the entire premise for the work, and also because it means that when the viewer is standing up, they're relating to where I am, which would be an inversion if they were standing on the ground watching me.
I think for me, I can't quite remove myself, even though I know it's a private performance. I can't remove myself from you as the artist in the world, and that it does speak to me about artistic process.
Mm-hmm.
And does reference other works that also speak about artistic process. And I guess the same thing with, you know, we're talking about the male female, that what is it for a woman, female artist to be active in this way in this video work. And, these questions come up for me when I'm reading it.
I'm interested in the live body, but I'm not interested in my own life in the work.
Kate, it brings to mind some of your more drawings as well in terms of how you've as a viewer we understand that there was a performative act to make those works, but we also understand that it was a very intimate, private situation that we're not privy to.
Yeah, I mean, I think
so there's an abstraction of that.
I really understand Whitey's position. In that there is something about performing in private, and then the trace or the residue of that work is what becomes reactivated or active when the work's exhibited.
Mm.
And it is a different entry point, a different
departure point for the viewer. You know, in the case of my own work, it's sort of, I guess, I'm trying to understand what happened or, you know, uncover something. And I think with the framing device and the reorientation of the work, it's removed from the, you know, from the real performance, and it does become something else. And it becomes operational in relationship specifically to the other objects and elements in the exhibition.
And there's also something about the endless cycle that you can do in like one video a week that you can't do in a performance, where Jim was only asleep for 2 hours, I wasn't prepared to either restage that and have somebody lie down and close their eyes for 5 hours every day. I wasn't interested in that. I was much more interested in telling the story or having the imprint of that. But to be able to have this movement keep going throughout the whole thing is actually really... and not just with the residue of it, and not just tell stories about, oh yeah, she walked around the wall, but to actually see that constantly. And even if you're here for 10 minutes, you see it 4 times, you see that repeated act of that repeated stress and that repeated release, and that being a continuous...
it maintains the tension.
And it is a kind of respiration. I think you might have mentioned that idea before, you know, sort of like breathing in and out, you know, holding one's breath. And then
I wonder about the objectifying of the human body too, because it seems to me there's a really strong interplay between the horizontal and the vertical, which ties into a whole formless language of geometry. Mm. And I'm wondering that's how conscious that is. You know, the horizontal again, the tint at the vertical, but to maintain the vertical and the geometry within the space seems to be ongoing.
Absolutely. I'm not sure that it's come from that particular history. It's more like this one was about the earthquake, so it's about sort of shift, you know, that sort of displacement of when you actually see a natural disaster. We've seen so many of them recently. All of a sudden, the architecture has shifted, and what this building that we take for granted will be upright, and this is a wall we can rely on, is now on the floor, and we walk across it, or we're walking, you know, walking through situations that are not that dissimilar to what this is portraying. Even though there's cars driving through it the other way, there's still this absolute disruption of architecture. And having my family house burned down in the Canberra bushfires in 2002 was an amazing. There's no doubt that's been a really seminal moment in terms of... it's taken me a while to understand that's where what of my art has been coming from, but to be able to see the foundations above the ceiling, above the roof line, where there's no room for the body anymore, and that absolute collapse of space to an inversion of space has triggered a number of works where I've sort of been pushing my body into these non-spaces that shouldn't be activated, but all of a sudden there's no room for the body in that house. It doesn't exist. It's actually a negative space. So I've always been interested in this sort of shifting of otherwise really known and relied on navigational points, I suppose, the way that we expect architecture to be there, to have these understandings, and also that projection of memory, I think, as well, the way that we remember a space or dream of a space is slightly off, and we sort of slightly we can sense these moments of it, or these sort of slight structures, but we can't see the whole thing. In the same way, that's why I was playing with Jim being asleep. That point just before you drop off is the same way that you imagine the space. You can sense this structure here, and you can sense these bits, but you can't quite see them, and they're slightly out of whack for what they normally are. So that's sort of what I'm playing with. How that can is a sort of...
Also, psychologically, we expect that we're going to be able to find a place for ourselves, and quite often we're unable to. And I think that's why... the psychological investment in this work is so strong. It starts to make me question the sense of certainty in my own body, in my emotional self, in my psychological self, in my state of mind. It extends beyond, I think, an architectural reading.
Yeah, exactly. Or an architect might counteract that. You'll say,
yeah, possibly.
I mean,
it is the
it's
same.
Really
one
playing
the same.
Into
yeah.
A deeper reading of the role of architecture in relation to the body.
Well, perhaps
that
opens up the potential for different spaces rather than feeling a sense of doubt about the space I'm in. This is the way it explores the potential for some other kind of spatial exploration that's interesting.
But also in terms of that architecture sort of being similar to the body in terms of it not being stable, I'm realising as well that it also relates to Jim, where he's had, I think he's the only one that would have been able to sleep through an opening because he's had severe back pain for 5 years and had multiple keyhole surgeries and usually walks with a cane, and he's had to really reassess, and he's a, you know, a tall, strapping lad who used to, you know, play football and be very physical, and now is sort of the opposite of that. And he's had to learn how to meditate and go into a deep sense of himself to be able to find a place of calm, regardless of what's going on around him. So I knew that he was the only one that was going to be able to sleep through it, but also just realizing that we take our bodies for granted the way we take our space for granted, I suppose, and they're both, you know, not something that can be relied upon, and they're both, you know, they're both can shift and change and be lost, and there's a grief that goes along with both of those senses of loss, I suppose.
Maybe not loss, maybe opening to other possibilities. That's what I haven't thought of any kind of sense of loss in looking at this. It's more like the potential to be otherwise.
Good. No, I feel that's really good, because I feel like it means that my work's shifting enough, and it means clearly that I am shifting enough to feel like it's actually more optimistic in terms of what's going on. And that it's, I mean, I look at this as well and think that it's actually there's a spiritual element to it as well. Which I don't
maybe
quite know how to articulate, but yeah.
I don't understand that, what you're saying, Terry, about potential, but I feel like it's anticipating, it's on the point of anticipating something, and that in that moment, it is actually it's almost a moment where you are not quite sure what that is going to be, or what's coming, or what one might become, or what that space of potential might be. So there's still a sense of anxiety on the edge of that. I don't think it's quite there yet.
This video is so much like walking on the moon, you know, exploring this unknown terrain. So I feel like there's an anxiety in going into that other terrain that you don't normally occupy, but I do feel like it's like walking on the wall and inverting the video articulates this other space and time.
I particularly enjoy the stealth relation to the fact that you're around in a public street doing this. You know, I keep having this recurring imagery. You try to, you know, creep past my father's bedroom when I was 17 to get out of there waking him up, which is ridiculous because he was in deeper sleep forever.
Are you wearing all black, or is it the black and white image that makes it appear?
I think I'm wearing a black top and black jeans. Yeah. I was trying to figure out a colour that was going to be, because the sky was so white and the buildings were grey, and it's just like, I knew it was going to be black and white, so what am I, it was a tricky one. It was really, the lighting was really poor by that stage, because it took us so long to actually make the structure. We sat in the morning, did the whole thing, and then the this was the fifth take, so this is like the last bit of the light before, you know, I think it was about 6:30 or something. So it also has that sort of haziness. It would have been much clearer if we'd shot it in the middle of the day.
One thing I'd like you to talk a little bit about is the objects, the weighted objects on the floor. They're sort of poised somewhere between, I guess, the utilitarian nature of concrete and the glass that concrete has been poured into. And also as a sort of, they're almost and they don't actually function, as Terry mentioned before, as well as a true weight. So I was just wondering if you could sort of start a conversation perhaps about how you see the position of these objects and the attitude to the world.
Sure. I suppose I'm interested if that small object embedded in the wall and the objects on the floor weren't here, it becomes completely structural and it becomes completely on one scale. And I was, you know, in terms of it being furniture or architecture, and I was interested in sort of playing with these domestic objects to bring it back into another kind of a way that we, I don't know, just a different kind of relationship to the body and to the viewer, but to transform them again into something slightly unfamiliar.
They seem domestic in scale, but they're not domestic in use or the kind of object they are, except for the glass, are they?
No, they are. That's the thing. I didn't realise how obscure they would become, but they're actually light fittings.
The round shapes are light fittings.
Yeah, filled with concrete. So I think that
they're quite transformed, though.
They're completely transformed. And in some ways, I didn't realise how transformed they would be. I thought they would be more obviously light fittings filled with concrete. And they've become. Yeah, these highly polished, highly finished works, which wasn't my intention. I was thinking of them as the glass, or if the glass is more obvious for the other ones to become, and then understood through the glass.
As a more prosaic.
Glass, yeah, because the glass is this, and also it's this whole idea of playing with the horizontal lines as well, where the ceiling comes down to the floor, because there's like things should be up here and now they're on the floor and they're weighted, and the glass should be not on the floor as well, and it's weighted, and it's this weight that I wanted the ropes to be slack, because they're tethered, they're actually boat tethering knots, and to have that sense of, even though it's sort of counterbalanced, it shifts again because it's sort of like tethering to the way it's a boat would be moored. And I was interested in that slacking off as well.
I feel like they could tighten.
Yeah. That was sort of the idea that if you pulled the bed down, that would become tight. But none of this is actual. It's sort of like suggesting these things, but also I didn't want the tension there. I wanted that release in the same way that this is released. I wanted to play with that slacking off of the rope, where that tension has been taken away.
It's interesting how in the context of the materiality of the show, they're almost kind of ornamental.
They are ornamental, aren't they? Yeah. I'm not sure whether the relationship between the ornamental and the functional and the purely architectural is articulated or resolved. I'm not quite sure about that aspect.
But I enjoy how it throws everything else.
That was kind of what I was saying before, that there's this kind of ornamental staging that goes on that sets up kind of frustration, but maybe that's a good thing, because otherwise it would be too singular in its articulation.
Exactly. And I know that people have said, well, there's too much going on in the work, and it could have just been video by itself and the video with the structure that was on the roof, and it's like, well, that's just one. I've got this whole space. Why would I want to limit it to just one singular idea? I've got this opportunity where I've got the viewer from this whole engagement of walking through an entire site, and that's why I was interested in adding these different pieces. And I like the fact that they're jarring. I like the fact that they're unknown.
Yeah, they're not really jarring so much as they're just...
Well, in relation
they're
to
held
the
in abeyance
in relation
together.
To
and
the other
thing. They bring in another language. Mm.
They do bring in another language, but they suspend the relationship between that ornamental language and a more, as I say, utilitarian, towards a formal language. And the way that I can justify that to myself...
It makes sense of it,
in relation to the title and the suspension test and the way that things that the relationships aren't necessarily resolved or even go towards an articulation towards a combination. They're just held there. Mm. And the rope at first to me seemed like a real device for that. Too divisive. The more time I spend with it, I enjoy that relationship. I enjoy the fact that I can't resolve it.
It allows the work to be provisional.
Yeah. But it certainly is another, quite a loud element.
Mm. But as I said, I really like the ambiguity between the objects. Yeah. That's sort of what I was interested in playing with. Otherwise, it does become obvious, or that you understand it all just by looking at it from one single point, which so much work does. You just look at it and go, okay, that's the idea. You don't even have to go into it, or you don't have to put any effort into trying to understand it. It's just like, it may as well be a photograph.
Well, yeah, I mean, a single work, if it's a good work, can open it up.
I'm not saying that a single idea is a bad one. Mm. I just mean that I'm interested in layering it where things shift between each other, sort of playing with that idea.
So I suppose we should start drawing to a close. The obvious question is what has this brought to you? Where do you go now? Or is it too early to ask questions like that? When is it?
This is actually my first solo show, so that's been a really interesting process to go through, and I've really enjoyed it. And I feel like in some ways that this is less provisional than my other collaborations, because collaborations necessarily have to be provisional, because you don't get to completely resolve it. There are always these, even if they're folding into each other, you never have complete control over the space. And that's the idea. It's like always left in a little bit of an unknowing. And in this way, I knew what I was going to put in here very early on, and it was a matter of just making the work to put here. So I'm interested in doing something like that again. But at the same token, my next show is actually with Katie Lee again. So
a long-term collaborator.
Yeah, we've collaborated a number of times. Really enjoy collaborating with her, and we have a slightly different language, but we also, there's a lot of crossover, and we know each other's work well enough to be able to really unoffensively be able to say, this doesn't work because of this, and this needs to be moved here, and we trust each other implicitly, which is a really lovely way of working. And then I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, it's like I don't have an answer to where do I go now. I'm not sure. There's an answer with a dancer, so I definitely want to go back and do collaboration. I've got a show with Susan Jacobs and Katie Lee at Sarah Scout at the end of the year.
Katie Lee said an interesting thing to me. She said, I'm not sure about poetry anymore.
Yeah. And that's why this, I understand that. That's why this show is incredibly poetic. Because I am.
It's very elegant.
Yeah, it is elegant.
Yeah. And I was really interested in doing that for this show. I really wanted to make work that was easily accessible, that there was a language where it wasn't just talking about formal concerns, it wasn't just talking about things that we were particularly interested in. I really wanted to open it out so it was more generous work where people could read it easily and project themselves into it easily and understand it easily, even if it doesn't all fit perfectly, but just that they could access it. I was interested in that. I really wanted to do that for the show.
Thank you for doing that.
Do you want to say anything, Terry, or we all... Katie.
No, thanks, Brian.
Thank you all for being here today.